Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Roering, Jack Spencer, Mike Malott, and Jacob Kanzler. A little later, Gary Glenn, representative out of the Midland area, Williams Township now, going to be joining us to talk about the conservative angle on gun control and what should be done about the rash of school shootings and other high-profile shootings that we're seeing across the country. But first, guys, we just got some polling data from Epic MRA. It looks like they were doing some polling for Normal, and they did legalize marijuana, John.
They did, and they've got, I'll break it down a little bit here, they've got 61% total vote yes. Now, I'm going to break that out a little bit. 45% said they'd definitely vote for it, 13% said they will probably vote for it, and 3% said they are leaning towards voting. So that's how they get to the 61% total vote. But as we've always talked about with ballot proposals, that 60% mark is kind of the high water mark you want to be at if you've got a good shot at getting something through.
Jack, I'm going to read this question that they did. You tell me if you think it's leading or not. If enough valid petition signatures are collected, a proposal may appear on a future election ballot related to the issue of marijuana. The proposal would make the possession and cultivation of limited amounts of marijuana legal in the state of Michigan for adults age 21 or older. Also, it will allow the sale of marijuana to adults age 21 or older only by stores that would be licensed by the state. And finally, it would tax the sale of marijuana by these state-licensed stores. If this proposal were to appear on a future election ballot, and if the election were to be held today, would you vote yes to approve of the proposal, or would you vote no to oppose it?
I don't think there's anything wrong in terms of the actual wording describing the proposal. Words like limited kind of flash in my mind as, gee, is that kind of a catchword that sticks in people's minds when they answer these questions? Is it a little bit leading? Maybe a little bit. It does make it sound really like a moderate proposal, and so it may have knocked up the numbers just a little bit.
Jacob, what did you make of this poll? Because clearly there is a debate right now about whether this is, first of all, whether it makes the ballot, whether it has the signatures and whatnot. But let's say it does get on the ballot here. Is this something that you think has a lot of support right now where it would pass?
Well, maybe this poll kind of shows this. I think, you know, obviously the poll question is big determinant in what we get back. But I think they tried to keep to the basics, the four corners of the proposal. And if you've been following the legalized recreational marijuana campaign, the coalition to regulate marijuana like alcohol, they're trying to treat it just like that. They're trying to treat it as kind of a, this is something like alcohol. It's kind of like this extra thing, and we're just going to tax it. We're going to just treat it responsibly. Just kind of go about it in a very like responsible regulation way, as opposed to it being fronted by the diehards, the you know, end prohibition kind of folks like that. The poll kind of reflects that, just kind of say like, what do we do with this substance? What do we do with this thing you can use? And how do we regulate and do it responsibly? And it seems like there is some support behind it from the numbers here.
Mike, one of the things that I think the marijuana folks are kind of leery about, and this could go both ways, but as you look ahead at the potential questions that could be on the ballot, they are all very kind of liberal leaning, whether it's minimum wage or whether it's redistricting reform, whether it's paid sick leave. And could this get wrapped into a huge no vote campaign that is launched by, let's say, the Chamber of Commerce or somebody else? And so this, it almost cuts both ways in that this could encourage people who want to see legalized marijuana come out, but it could also act as a deterrent in that when you have a simple message like a no vote, vote no on everything, it gets really catchy and it could get caught into a tidal wave of other liberal proposals that folks want to vote no on.
Well, there's no doubt that when you get a crowded ballot, it becomes hard to get your message across. So, yeah, it could be subject to a wider campaign than that. But these issues have nothing to do with each other. What does gerrymandering have to do with recreational marijuana versus prevailing wage? I think the trend that you have to look at for recreational marijuana is other states have done it, and the world hasn't fallen apart. I think there's a real momentum here for legalization.
All right. Well, we're going to keep our eyes on that. But, Jack, I get the sense here from looking at this data, 48% of Republicans support it, 48% of Republicans don't support it. So it's still not widely popular in a Republican primary. And I bring this up because last week, the Senate voted on a proposal that would codify a court decision and allow people who have medical marijuana cards to have their marijuana with them in the vehicle as opposed to locked in a box in their trunk. And the Senate put this up on the board.
Yeah, it's a little bit of intriguing that for some reason the Senate decided to go ahead and put this up for a vote. It was a House bill, and it had passed in the House 104-3. It was basically, there was an appeals court decision, but basically said that if you have the medical card, you no longer have to leave your the marijuana, you know, locked up in the trunk or in some kind of box where you can't get at it when you're driving. And they put it up for a vote in the Senate, and it was voted down.
Now, this doesn't happen very often. That's why I bring it up. Neither the House or the Senate usually put things up only to shoot them down.
Well, the question is, why do you put something up there when you don't have the votes for it? And I think that's why it's intriguing. And I still wonder if there's some political things that we'll see later on down the road involving this issue, because it seems like a pretty sexy issue to me. So-and-so voted for open carry of marijuana.
Well, let's put some names to this, because in the House, Tom Leonard, who's running for Attorney General, is in charge of the House, and he's the one who made sure that, I guess, that got through. And then in the Senate, Tanya Schutmaker is also running for Attorney General, and I would presume she was one of the no votes.
Oh, she was very strong no vote, and her answer on that was that she was against marijuana all the way from the very beginning. She voted against the legalization of it, of even the medical. So I just, you know, if you want some intrigue, you never know. Maybe it's way off the mark, but I just thought it was a very interesting thing that this developed in the Senate, and the explanations for why they did it just seemed a little different.
Well, we know that this is a contested convention fight because we just saw some mailers from the Schutmaker campaign last week in which she goes after Tom Leonard for having donated before to a Democrat, the Democrat being his former boss, David Layton, the Genesee County prosecutor, which, I don't know, John, you could always argue that's good business to donate to your boss if he's running for re-election.
Well, it's one of those secrets that is not really a secret in this town, that generally when you work for a politician, you are required to contribute to their campaign. When you work for a caucus, you are required to contribute to the caucus. It's just pretty much the farm system here.
Job security, right?
Job security, that's right. You want to play ball, then let's play ball.
Last thing I wanted to bring up here, Jack, there's a lot of discussion right now about gun control, particularly now after what we saw up in central Michigan with the shooting up there. But in the past, when Democrats have tried to make gun control an issue, it seems like it only goes until about July or August, and then the issue fades away. Could 2018 be different?
That's what I'm watching for. I remember Littleton, the first kind of the mother of all these school shootings, and it was a huge issue. We covered it here, just demonstrations, all kinds of things going on with it, and on through the summer. And then, if you'll remember, Al Gore was the Democratic standard bearer for president. Suddenly, at the Democratic National Convention, he had Tommy Lee Jones standing up there talking about how when they were in college together, they used to go out and shoot cans and bottles. Then, within a couple of weeks, he went duck hunting, and he had the whole national press following him, taking pictures of him holding a gun. And ever since then, I have watched, and it just seems to me that every time it gets into an election year, general election year, this becomes a second or third tier issue for the Democrats. And maybe this year will be different, but it's something I watch for every time.
Well, I actually think it's going to be different this year, because I think the progressive wing of the Democratic Party is exerting so much pressure on where that party stands that I wouldn't be surprised if they actually try to push it this year.
Well, it would totally be a sea change. I mean, just remember 2016 when Rob Wittenberg put out that bill package with, who else was involved in that bill package? Was it Townsend? Or there were some other liberal Democrats who put together some kind of gun control legislation in October. And you had Scott DeAnda and Tim Grimmel saying, whoa, 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 what are you doing? We're not doing that right now. And sure enough, if Bo LaFave didn't come back and say, up in his district in the 108th, say, look at what the Democrats want to do. They want to take away your guns.
Well, I feel that if you're going to make that much of a fuss about it after the shooting and everything else, that's fine, but you really owe it to the people to take it through all the way to Election Day.
Maybe they can refine the message good enough so that they can't be misconstrued into, we want to take away your guns. And I don't know how you do that. I'm not the message maker, but
you'd almost have to do more of a limited package where we're just going to look at background checks and we're going to mix it in with proposals that deal with screening and mental health.
The red flag proposal, which is what I think the gun control people want to do.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Democrats and folks on that side that want to push for the gun control, because it seems like the message out of the Republican side this time around is school safety. It seems to be the key term. You know, you have people talking about mental health and some of the other token things that come from the conservative side, but it seems a lot of the emphasis, especially here in this legislature, is about school safety. And I don't know what that means. It's a pretty broad thing that can include a lot of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays and how that can deter these gun control measures.
Mike, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Do you see a Jim Runstead or the Republicans saying, you know what, maybe if we do something limited, that can blunt anything that the Democrats can come back with at election time and try and campaign on?
Oh, I don't see in this legislature, we've had several proposals this term to loosen gun laws. I don't see the Republicans offering anything to limit guns. I think it's up to the Democrats to put a proposal forward, and I think that's the hard part. What do you propose?
I was thinking of this red flag proposal, that if a family member or law enforcement believe that an individual could do harm to themselves or others, that there'd be some type of judicial hearing to see if that person should surrender their guns and the cops can come and take their guns away. I don't know if there's enough stomach among the Republican caucus to do something like that, but that is something I could see as being that next step that the Democrats could try and push for. It seems like there's a openness to talk about it, but as our next guest will talk about, at the very conservative end of this caucus, there doesn't seem like they're willing to go that far. Joining us this week for the podcast is Representative Gary Glenn from Williams Township. Thanks for being available today.
You bet, Kyle. Good to be with you, as always.
Okay, well, I wanted to talk about your feelings on school safety. This is an issue that has been thrust back into the limelight. What is your position on what the state can do to be proactive, I suppose, on school safety?
First thing I think that we need to do is adopt all of the above approach. The Speaker of the House has had as a priority for the last year addressing the mental illness question. He typically talks about it in the broad context that if you have an inmate, for example, in the state prison system, they cost $30,000 a year to the taxpayer to feed and clothe and house. But if that same inmate has a mental illness, then it costs $100,000. So three times more expensive to the taxpayer. It's not just a matter of helping people, being compassionate to people who have that kind of affliction, but also saving money for taxpayers. In the context of this question in particular, obviously, whether it was in the case of the shooter in Florida or anybody who might be in a similar situation in Michigan, we want to make sure that people who do not pass a federal background check, which includes a mental illness test or question, do not have access to firearms. And we have just passed this week some additional reporting requirements for state law that we think will have the effect of bringing into the system and the system of information so that they would be, some people who would not have been identified otherwise will be identified as having a mental illness and therefore would not pass the background check and be able to purchase a weapon. So that's going to be one of the priorities. I think anything else we can do to harden schools, because I think most people overwhelmingly would agree, we have all kinds of mechanisms to protect courthouses, you know, like metal detectors. We have armed security guards that protect the House of Representatives or other elected officials or federal buildings or banks. It doesn't seem logical to me that we would think we should take all of those steps to harden those kind of facilities and then leave completely vulnerable the buildings where our children are every day. Now, I'm the father of five adult children, but I am also the grandfather of six very young grandchildren. And this is a distressing issue for me, as it is for most Americans, I guess for all Americans, that we ought to do everything possible. Now, a Rasmussen poll yesterday showed that 60%, by a 2-to-1 margin, parents of school-aged children want that all-of-the-above approach to include the possibility of a school employee who is willing, voluntarily willing, who has a CPL, who would submit to additional training on a monthly basis, I think would be appropriate, to be able to carry a concealed weapon to be part of that solution. But the focus needs to be on whatever we need to do to make our schools secure. The question around here, as you know, Kyle, is what can get 56 votes in the House, 20 votes in the Senate, and be signed into law by Governor Snyder. That all of the above approach, if we have a menu from which to pick, whatever the governor will sign and we can get through both houses that secure the facilities where we send our children 5 days a week, that's going to be the priority, I'm sure, not only for me personally, but for every other member of the legislature.
Now, you were a supporter, and I believe the sponsor of expanding concealed carry. Do you think that the discussions on concealed carry is going to be postponed for a while or maybe dead for the session?
My expectation is that the only piece of gun legislation that Governor Snyder is likely to sign is one that was approved by the military division, which would simply be to codify the existing policy under Adjutant General Vadnay that says that uniformed military personnel who are under the jurisdiction exclusively of the state National Guard, not under the Pentagon, currently have the right to carry concealed when they're in uniform on base. So we would simply be codifying that existing policy under the Snyder administration so that a future administration could not change it. That's already passed the House 103-5. I think it came out of the Senate Judiciary Committee unanimously. I would think it would pass the Senate as well, and we expect the governor would sign that. I think expecting a governor who's made his views clear on this issue to sign other types of legislation regarding that issue is problematic. So I've learned we have to focus on the things we can get done through both houses and be signed into law by the governor. If that's additional security apparatus for our schools, if it is being aggressive about making sure mentally ill individuals don't have access to firearms, if it requires additional spending out of our surplus to address some of those safety questions, if that's what we can get done, I think people should be assured that we're going to do something.
We've heard some discussion about this red flag legislation. Folks who would like to see more gun control talk about being able to take guns away from people who a judge would agree could be a danger to him or herself or others. Is that something that you think you could support?
I told some ladies the other day that talked to me about that issue that I was extremely skeptical but open to the discussion.
What are you skeptical about?
Well, skeptical that it can be done in such a way that doesn't violate the Second Amendment of the Constitution, doesn't violate people's rights. For example, to contemplate the possibility of a SWAT team showing up at somebody's door unannounced to confiscate their guns, that is a red flag to me. And apparently that's what the legislation would allow, and it would be our law enforcement personnel who'd have to actually carry it out, show up at somebody's home unannounced, tell them that there's been a notice made, and of course there's no guarantee that it is a legitimate complaint. Could be somebody upset at their former boyfriend trying to get back at them. But law enforcement personnel have to show up at somebody's door unannounced and announce they're going to confiscate somebody's weapons. That is not consistent, in my view, with the Second Amendment. And we're being told that law enforcement does not want to be put in that role of putting their own law enforcement personnel at risk to have to do this all the time. So I am very skeptical. I am open to any conversation about making sure that people who should not have guns, the mentally ill and felons, don't have access to guns, and also at the same time protect the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding citizens. You know, in the case of people who, depending on the definition, what is mental illness? If somebody's suffering temporary depression, do we then say that they do not have the right to defend themselves? I mean, it depends on how it's defined And I remain very skeptical. And the fact that law enforcement, who we would expect to be strongly supportive of anything they believe in their experience, and their experience is superior to mine, if they believe something based on their experience is likely to actually impact gun violence, and they don't support this, that, as I said, is kind of a red flag to me. There was a major survey done of some 15,000 law enforcement personnel 5 years ago. It's a five-year-old poll. But a lot of the things that people float as solutions, law enforcement's, the response of 15,000 law enforcement personnel, is that they didn't think that would have any actual effect on stopping gun violence. For example, limiting a particular kind of firearm they thought would have no effect.
So we could ban assault rifles and you don't think it will make a hill of beans a difference?
No, then you go get ball bearings and dynamite, or you run over somebody with a car, you get a long knife. I mean, it is societal problems, I think, that should be addressed as well. It's not the weapon of choice. We've seen terrorists use all kinds of different weapons. Some almost 20 years ago now, they used airplanes.
The Bath in Bath, Michigan, somebody used a bomb.
Back in 1920-something, the worst school killing in American history, I think.
But it's more common than it used to be then. We've had more school shootings than we did 20, 30, 40 years ago. Why is that? Why do you think that is?
Are you sure, Kyle, that's the case? I saw a story the other day that said that schools were safer now than they were, say, in 1990 was the story. At least that was the time frame that the story was addressing, and I'd be happy to send that to you. But I share the concern of some. I'm a conservative, no question about that. I'm a social conservative. When we've raised generations of children and told them that it's okay to choose to terminate the life of a prenatal child, should we be surprised when they have less concern and value on life than perhaps past generations have? When we've had generations of children exposed to violent video games where they earn points for killing people, they get more points for how aggressively or violently they kill them. When we've taken God out of the classroom, I think some of those societal issues ought to be addressed as well. You know, you need a bigger government and more police and more social services if people believe that the life, the extent of life is whatever we leave here, they're not accountable to anybody. You know, past generations of Americans overwhelmingly were raised to believe that there's a God to whom they're someday going to be accountable, and as a result, they policed their own behavior. We had less government, less law enforcement, less spending on social services. And so there are a lot of societal issues, I think, that are behind some of these problems. And obviously we have both the threat of domestic type violence we saw in Florida recently or out in Las Vegas, and then we have as well the threat of international terrorism. I continue to believe that in an era when we've seen violence in the streets, even seen violence encouraged in the streets, when we've seen mass shootings take place, when we know that our country is subject to terrorist attack, that the more law-abiding citizens who are trained to exercise their Second Amendment rights to protect themselves and their families and those around them, the better.
You mentioned the societal change. Is there a role for government in any of this? Talking about taking God out of the classroom, the video games, abortion.
You know, the government, it is a result of governmental policies that all of those things have changed as opposed to what they were a generation ago or two generations ago.
So should we ban violent video games?
Well, I think we will reach a point where we should seriously contemplate anything we think might be helpful. And I think it's sticking our heads in the ground to think that conditioning somebody, you know, the human brain doesn't know the difference between a game at the subconscious level, doesn't know the difference between a violent game and violence in the real world. So should we put age limits? Maybe we should raise the age limit on violent video games? Yeah, we ought to talk about that, in my opinion. Should we allow discussion of faith in God in our public schools again? Absolutely, I think we should. And I think polls have consistently shown for half a century since that policy was changed that somewhere in the area of 70% of Americans think that prayer ought to be allowed in school. In the first grade, we used to pray before we went to lunch in a public school. And I just think there is a societal aspect to this that needs to be addressed beyond whichever weapon of choice somebody who obviously does not place the same value on life that most of us do chooses to employ. whether it's ball bearings and some type of explosive, whether it's running over people with a van or a truck, whether it's a knife, all of the various things that, are available to people to use as weapons, it's the evil that's in the heart of people who choose to use them to do harm to their fellow human beings that should be addressed.
Representative Gary Glenn from Williams Township, thanks for being available on the podcast today.
You betcha. Thank you, Kyle.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Representative Gary Glenn, Jack, Mike, Jacob, and John, you're a star, man. You were on the Breakfast Podcast.
I was on Cold Cereal, where we talked about politics, journalism, and fish. Well, actually, not very much about politics, more about journalism.
Yeah.
And fish.
Yeah. They had more high-tech equipment over there, John.
Yeah, I'm kind of embarrassed. I think I might have to go shopping this afternoon and get some proper podcast equipment.
I believe their podcast is called Cold Oatmeal. Just want to make sure that's
right,
known for the record.
Right, yeah. And they're very good hosts. They're very good interviewers. I had a really good time spending some time with the strategists at Rush Strategies.
Do they have their own studio too?
No, it was just that they have an office set aside. They have more comfortable furniture than we have here, and they also have all those mics that we need to pick up.
We're slackers here, man.
We're just...
Yeah, well, that wouldn't be...
Using the same Marantz for the last 5-6 years, I think.
The same Marantz that doesn't have a back on it anymore. I have to tape it or else this thing won't work. I have to tape this door closed or else the card is going to slip out of here.
Well, that room down the hall is looking pretty available for the once proposed MERS podcast studios.
Yeah, Ken Marks has moved out quite a while ago. And
got to get some foam. I got to get that room cleaned up.
We could make this thing really official.
We could.
Or we can just keep doing this, and I can just keep passing the Marantz around.
we can keep talking about it.
My Dutch tradition says we're going to keep passing that broken Marantz around.
It's kind of like road, road funding.
It's like road funding.
Ah, you don't need to pave it.
Just gravel that podcast pothole, and we're going to run over it.
As long as the Marantz keeps working, we're going to keep passing it around. But as long as you keep enjoying it and keep listening to it, we'll keep producing it. So thanks for listening. Thanks to AT&T for this, for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.